Hey y'all, and welcome back to another episode of That Vet Life. Today I'm talking with veterinarian and fellow podcaster Dr. John Arnold. A veterinarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, Dr. John is also a podcast host of his own, which is called Podcast Vet, and I highly recommend you guys go and check him out. The links will be in the description. I had so much fun in this episode, and John starts it out by basically taking us through his story of veterinary medicine and how he got to where he is. And part of that is learning to deal with failures, which we do go into. Additionally, we cover topics like finding a job, approaching interviews, and negotiating paychecks. It's a jam-packed episode, and I'm so excited to share it with you guys. So, let's get into it. So then if we look at where you are right now, because you are working in Colorado in a general practice, but how about we take, like, turn back the timetable a little bit and go through your story in vet med. So, like, where did you, like, when did you first really think about veterinary medicine as a career?
Yeah, you know, I always loved animals from being a kid. And the turning point for me when it kind of clicked was in high school. I was maybe, 15, 16 or so. And I went to our local veterinarian where we took our pets at the time. And it was a single doctor, kind of old school practice. And I said, hey, I think this might be something I'm interested in doing. Can I come by and hang out for a little bit? And in typical, kind of old school fashion, he was like, well, can you sweep? And I said, yes, sir, I can sweep. So that's how I started, is sweeping the floors. And then the part where it really clicked for me was, this guy was amazing, Dr. Moore, in Southern California, in Westminster, California. He did everything, and a specific case came in that a cat came in vomiting, needed surgery. I know now it was a foreign body with a resection and anastomosis, but at the time he was like, hey kid, come on in and help me. Gloved up, my memory of it is he just opened up this cat's guts, found the guts, cut it out, sewed it back together, and the cat walked off. And I was like, that's the coolest thing ever.
Wow. And the fact that you got to like scrub in on that at that age, that is awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how, this is a while ago, so I don't know how okay that was, but man, it really got me stoked.
Yeah, no better way to like light a fire under someone than to really stick them in the hot seat.
Yeah, and it was, I didn't know if it was going to gross me out, but it did the total opposite. It was like, man, you get to use your brain, you get to use your hands, you get to use, you get to take stuff apart and put it back together again. And man, I just thought that was the coolest. And from there was no turning back. And he was a great mentor to me through high school. And then I looked at where the top vet schools were at the time. And my parents, this is one thing that I think I'm going to do with my kid if she decides to go to college. I'm tangenting a little bit, Mariah, I'm sorry.
Oh, go for it.
But my parents did a really smart thing looking back, where I was very fortunate that we took a trip kind of around up through California, north through Oregon and Washington, back through Colorado, and visited schools, universities. And I just fell in love with the mountains. I miss the beach still. I love visiting it, but I just fell in love with the mountains, fell in love with the green. I fell in love with all of the, man, it's just an outdoor playground here. And I just fell in love with Colorado and specifically Colorado State University. And it so happened that at the time it was one of the top vet schools. I think we're still up there pretty good. But that's where I came out for my undergrad. And I've done my undergrad, grad school, vet school here, and now I own a practice a couple blocks away from the teaching hospital.
So it kind of all came full circle for you.
Yeah, there's some bits in between, but yeah, full circle.
And going through, you were smallies all the way, or did you dabble in large animal at all?
Oh my God, I dabbled for like 2 weeks in large animal, and it was clearly not for me. It is safer for large animals that I am not dabbling with them.
What makes you say that?
So you can track at our vet school, you can track small animal, large animal, or mixed. And I was always a small animal. I grew up in a small beach town. There were not things larger than Great Danes there. So I just didn't have that experience. A lot of my friends in vet school were some of the large animal folk, and I remember having so much fun with them. And they gave me a hard time for that 2 weeks on clinics, but they really took care of me, and we had a lot of fun. But man, it was not my gift. I got short arms.
Hey, that doesn't stop you on a skinny Holstein Friesian, though.
Oh man, I don't even know what that is. So,
if you have a skinny Holstein Friesian, you can, and you have an okay arm length, you can reach around to the other side to fix like an LDA or something.
Oh yeah, you're just I don't even, that language, I don't even remember.
So. Or to the other end, you just need a stool. I'm one of those people that needs a stool, but
Got it. Yeah, my biceps are definitely small enough, but I just remember like having to reach so far that I picture the right side of my face just like smacking up against the cow's rectum while it's shitting on me.
I'm pretty sure.
And I'm like,
there's actually a comedy skit all about that. I'll have to send it to you after this, but keep going.
Oh my God. I was just like, do I really want to spend the rest of my life doing this? I'm just like jamming my hand in and just totally getting like shit showered on.
Yeah, but the fact that you had to ask yourself that kind of gives it away.
It was good that I went on that rotation because I thank God there are people out there who love to do it. I have many friends who do. It is just not my calling.
And that is all right.
Thanks. Thank you.
And so you've just kind of stayed in small animal practice. Have you stayed in Colorado the entire time, or did you jump around to different places?
I jumped around. I absolutely loved my first job. My wife now, girlfriend at the time, I always pictured that I would move back to California and open up a small, two-doctor practice near a very good surfing break so that when the waves were good, I could close the clinic down and go surf. So my wife was kind enough to move back to the Los Angeles area with me, where she did an internship and I went into general practice. We thought that's where we would end up. Now I'm digressing. So your question was, where was I always in small animal? I was, but wasn't always in Colorado. I thought we'd move back to California and surf and do some veterinary medicine on the side. So we moved back to Los Angeles. My first job was in Hollywood, California, which was so fun. It was so fun to be, just 20-something and, my commute's the Sunset Strip and, you're seeing, actors and actresses and people in the entertainment industry. It added an element of fun. I had the most amazing mentor in the world. He gets so much credit for the fact that I am a functional human, let alone veterinarian today. Lee Calcine at Laurel Pet Hospital is one of my heroes. After that, my wife got into a surgical internship at Oregon State, so we moved up to Corvallis. Then she got a surgical residency at Colorado State, so we moved back to Fort Collins. I did some relief work, and then I bounced around doing some relief work outside of Reno, Nevada, and back through Fort Collins and all of Colorado.
And then Fort Collins is where you've kind of been for the past, 8, 10 years?
Something like that. Yeah, 10 years or so. 8, 10 years. Yeah, that sounds about right. and found a clinic that I am highly emotionally attached to, and fortunate enough to now own that clinic. So that had always been part of the dream, is owning a clinic.
And when you imagined owning a clinic, was that going to be in the first 5 years of being out of vet school? Was that going to be in the first 10 years? Or what did that look like for you?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think if you'd asked me in vet school, it would have been like, year one, I can do this. Yeah, why not?
And then reality hit.
Probably a little ambitious. And honestly, a lot of that path changed because... Yeah, because I met a girl, to be quite honest with you, and fell totally head over heels, and I was going to go wherever she went. Yeah, collective, yeah. I'll make sure she listens to this so she hears that, yeah. but no, that's the honest truth. Really, we were actually just talking about this the other night. Really thankful for those journeys because... had an amazing time in Oregon and loved the rain, loved the green. Wouldn't have had that time and probably wouldn't even be here in Colorado. And we just love it here.
That's really kind of like an interesting, just a really cool story of how everything has always brought you back to where you are now. And there's not much, by the sound of it, that you would have really changed for better or for worse for the track that you went down to take you where you are.
No, I tend to celebrate my failures, and there are several. I always say that everybody fails, and that's totally okay. It's going to happen. You're going to fail. I have failed multiple times in life and in work as a veterinarian. I've told the story before where in veterinary school I killed a rabbit I was supposed to spay, or I was spaying. I made a mistake, and that rabbit died because of me. It came in for an elective procedure. I was the surgeon. I was in charge. I held the scalpel. I cut into the intestines, and that being died because of me. And that's a pretty bad failure. I think it's one that I've come to grips with, and it's one that, boy, the specifics of it is my approach. So my approach on a spay, I was too aggressive with my approach, and that bunny belly was just different than I'd ever experienced before, and I went right in through it, cut the intestine, and that unfortunately was the end of that that rabbit. And that was pretty terrible as a veterinary student. I can't, there aren't too many other more terrible things you can do than kill something, for lack of a better word, and have it be your fault. So, from that failure, I think I could have done a couple things. I could have just thrown away the scalpel and said I'm never touching it again. And I felt that way for, several days. How could I possibly do this again? This thing died because of me. Why am I doing this? We're not supposed to do any harm, right? And I just harmed something that was for
but
an
it's
elective
part of
procedure.
Your it's part of your story and part of your journey and part of the reason you are the awesome vet that you are today.
Oh, that's nice of you. And it took me probably longer than it should have to come to grips with that. Where are we going with this? Failures. So with that failure, it took me a while. But, looking back on it, with my abdominal approaches these days, that mistake probably has saved many, many things. Tumors that were sitting right against the body wall. Because I am to this day... who knows how many thousands of surgeries later, so careful on that approach. And I have that rabbit to thank for it. Gosh, I forgot where we were going with this. I'm sorry.
That's fine. We'll circle it back around. One way we can look at it is, so you've had all these experiences and they're still, even though it's been so many years, they're still fresh in your mind. Like, gosh, you're just remembering something from vet school. but now you have this role, if I'm correct, with working with students at CSU.
That brings me a lot of joy these days. I am our students here who come and spend time with us at the clinic, I am their biggest fan. If they are trying to get into vet school, I am going to do everything possible to help them with their dreams. If they are in vet school and want to learn anything, how to do things, how not to do things, that's what gets me really, really stoked these days. And it's so fun, coming full circle back here and now being, just a couple blocks from the hospital and interacting with those students, whether it's speaking or having them here at the clinic, or being on, curriculum committees at the vet school. It brings me a lot of joy. That community brings me a lot of joy.
And is that something you saw yourself doing when you were in vet school or when you were a recent grad, or how did you kind of fall into that position?
Well, I think we got a lot of students come and visit, and I really like the teaching aspect of it. I think I have my parents to thank for that. They're both teachers. They're both educators. I think that's in my blood, and I love it. I think I don't know if we got a reputation for that, but the pre-vet club reached out to have me come talk. The vet school approached me to be on some committees there. And, short answer is just I've been saying yes to all those things. And I'm so happy that I have.
So just more like opportunities came your way. You said, hey, I'll try it. And you realized just how much you had a knack for it and how much you really enjoyed it.
I don't know. They keep asking me to do stuff. So I don't think I've screwed up too bad yet.
And is that also part of the reason you maybe started the podcast?
Yeah. I get asked that question, and why podcast a vet? Why'd you start the podcast? And I think, admittedly, part of it, some self-therapy. I'll put that out there, humbly right away. And the second part of it was, I love veterinary people, and I think they're the best. Nurses, anybody in and around the hospital, I just think we're the most empathetic. I think we're some of the smartest people out there. I just think we're great, and we have great stories. And I think we were hurting. I think we are hurting. I think some of us are hurting. And this profession that I love, that has been very good to me at times and really hard on me at times, has driven some people away from the profession. And that worried me. And my hope was that hearing people's stories and asking people about their stories would build a community and make us feel, not alone.
Yeah, I think just hearing you say that was part of the reason that drew me over to your booth at the AVMA convention last year, which, for people who are listening, that's where we, I don't know, did I actually get to meet you? I think I met Kelsey when I was there. And hearing what Podcast Event was about, and I was like, that's similar to what I'm kind of trying to do ish when I was, that was like when I first really started this podcast. And I was like, I love this idea. And so just getting to hear you say that again, I think that is certainly what the veterinary profession can use more of, or just any profession in general that just has a slump. It's building that community back up that we have, because it always exists. You have it in certain small practices around the U.S., around the world. But to be able to say, hey, this has been my experience, and then have someone say, you know what, I had that same experience, or you know what, that brought me a lot of hope or something. And it strengthens the community and just strengthens the relationship. And then that kind of just disseminates out from veterinary medicine to the clients that we're dealing with and into other professions.
You're so right. And I'm so glad you're doing this. And I so love that you're bringing a student voice to veterinary medicine, because I love this profession. We have our problems and we're trying. I don't want to lose amazing humans from the vet profession. That was my, I don't want to say fear, but that was my concern, is losing exceptional people away from our profession. Because, you know, and it's not just us. You're right. You hit on it. Any of the helpers, so, you know, doctors, nurses, human or otherwise, paramedics, anything like that, anybody in the helping industry, we find parallels with our struggles. But yeah, it's easier for me to reflect now and say, you know, hey, you can pay off your student loans, you can own a business, you can have just for me to go out and say, you can have a financially rewarding life as a veterinarian or in the veterinary profession, and that's okay.
Yeah, and actually that's something that I feel like a lot of vet students, like, that's why what you're doing is so important, or just any veterinarian who's been in practice, like, what they have to say is so important. Because as a vet student who's going to be going through rotations and actual internships in the next, or actually into practice in the next year and a half, like, right now I'm starting to hit those points where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a veterinarian. Oh my gosh, I have to find practices to apply to. Oh my gosh, I don't know how to apply to a practice. What do I ask when I'm out of practice? What do I do when I'm in an interview? And that's where looking to people like yourself who have been in practice and kind of have that rear view mirror understanding about what's going on. That's where your voice is so important for, like, vet students, because I can say what my personal experience is going through the process, but to have someone be like, you know, this is what the experience that I had, or this is experience that one of my colleagues had, and this is how it worked for you, for them, and this is one of the options that you have, is so, so important, which is why I wanted to kind of touch on the idea of, like, applying to, like, the little break, that 1 to 2 years that happen outside, like, when you graduate from vet school, like, what happens during that time? Like, because when do people really start applying to practices?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think it starts the sooner the better. And, you know, our business and our profession is a relationship profession. And I give this this talk often to the veterinary students who come in here, and I'll censor it a little bit, but it's like it's the don't be a fill in your blank for whatever word that don't be a jerk. How about that? I'll censor it.
We'll
by
go
saying
with that.
Yeah. and what I mean by that is, you have this great opportunity in clinics of 1 or 2 years, depending on where your school is. And that's the impression that you leave there for, you know, forever. And I don't say that to put any pressure on you, but at all. That's not where I'm going with this. It's, that's the impression you leave. That's the relationships that that when I call back and say, hey, did you have this student? And, you know, how was she on clinics? And, you know, what was she like interacting with people? It's that experience that that I rely on. And there's always, you know, I always say we're like 1 degree of separation in the vet world. So inevitably, even, you know, across the world, there's going to be one person who knows another person who knows another person. So my advice to veterinary students would be, start early, build relationships, network, and making a, you know, just not making a good impression, but just being yourself and you know, showing you're a hard worker and that you don't mind having a little fun and you're okay with making mistakes, but you'll rally and you'll fix it, and, you know, just being you.
That's certainly a reminder that I feel like vet students need a lot, because we focus on, these are the things that I know and these are the skills that I've gotten. I've had to check them off on boxes. But to show up at a clinic and just be yourself, it can be a little daunting, because you're trying to prove yourself. You're trying to show them that, hey, I can actually do a good job here. But to hear, I hear it again, to say that, just be yourself, just be who you are, and that's the best that you can do, and that'll show them who you actually will be if you should be chosen to work at that clinic. That was a really long-winded way of saying that, but
I love it. Take me back in vet school at a rounds room with, and I'm just in awe of like all of these, you know, world-renowned doctors, and they're going around the rounds room, like, and you have to answer each time, and I know my time is coming up, and I'm sweating, and I'm like, I don't know, probably smelling at that point, probably just totally twitching and disgusting. By the time the question gets to me, I mean, I was terrified to answer questions. And then I became a little more comfortable with blurting out wrong answers. and occasionally there were right answers. And I'm really thankful to, now on the other side where I know and I'm friends with a lot of the clinicians over there, is they appreciate the effort, the ones who I've spoke to. And you can blurt out wrong answers, and that's embarrassing because your colleagues are there and you don't want to embarrass yourself around your other students. I kind of got over that quickly. And I think that's the advice I'd give myself. I'd give myself a few advices, but just take a deep breath and don't be afraid to embarrass myself a little more. Now I do it on a daily basis, but don't be afraid to blurt out wrong answers.
In rounds.
So, I'm lost. Tell me what your question was again. I'm sorry. I'm on a tangent.
I think I was starting to go down the line of the nitty gritty of actually applying to practice.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know for myself, I have this idea of what I think practice life can look like, but I don't know where to find practices that are available or like how to go about choosing where I even want to be in the U.S. or in the world.
Totally. So, that's where we're going with that. It starts by building relationships. So it starts by building a good impression with your professors, your clinicians, and the nurses and residents and everybody in vet school. And then, right around that, what I can tell you what I did, right around that senior year, I knew a location. So I knew we were going to the Los Angeles area. It was close to home. It's by the beach. And that's where we wanted to be. So I think if you could go anywhere in the world, sky's the limit. Your first job is probably not one you're going to stay at forever. Odds are it's not. So if you live in the snowy mountains and want to go to a sunny beach, maybe apply to places where there's a sunny beach, or vice versa. If you're somewhere where it's cold or rainy and you want the sun, go there. Or if you're at the beach and you want the mountains, then I would apply around the mountains. Pick a spot in the world. There's some logistics there for licensing and whatnot. But if you're, in the mountains and want to go to the beach, or at the beach and want to go to the mountains, pick a spot, and then, start sending out resumes. I'm a little more old school. Send a large, letter size resume that tells your story as a person on that front page concisely, and what you're looking for. And ideally, you go visit. You go visit some practices and put your face there, or ask around, and maybe you'll know somebody who knows somebody who works there. So networking, start early, and go for it. You're a big deal. You're graduating vet school. You are a big deal, and you are worth it to these employers.
That's a good reminder. You feel like such a small fish in a really big pond when you graduate. Even right now, as a third year going into my final year, I still feel like a really small fish in a really big pond.
Yeah, aren't we all, right? I'm here to say you're a unique fish, you're an important fish, and you are going to, how many more fish analogies can I do? You're going to swim great.
I'll take it. say you actually get a interview with some of these practices, are there things that you should be thinking about asking them, like say money or mentorship? Like, how do you, maybe this is like something for a whole different podcast, but how do you negotiate a paycheck? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, good question. So it's definitely its own podcast, but we'll hit some highlights.
Okay.
So, let's say, so the job of your resume is to get an interview, right? And that may be, you know, over a video call, or it may be ideally in person. I think, you know, some of the mistakes I made on some interviews was that I came with kind of carved out questions like, what is your policy on this? Or what is your policy on the, on that? When, you know, ultimately me on the other side now, I'm just looking for a great human. A great human who I'm going to spend a lot of time with. And I know you're smart. Like, you graduated vet school. I know you're a big deal. But, you know, are you going to fit into this family? Are you going to be kind to the nurses? Are you okay laughing at yourself and other things? Are you going to be, is vet school your only thing? Or is there some balance there? Is there some longevity there? What are you going to bring positively to the practice? And a lot of that's attitude. And that's hard to pick up on an interview. But, the interviews I went to, man, I would wear, man, just to set the picture for some of them, man, I'd wear a tie, which I had to YouTube to learn how to tie it. And then I'd be all sweaty and sitting there. Apparently there's a theme of sweating when sorry about that. I'm just sitting there totally awkward with these questions in my head that I'm supposed to ask, right? Because that's what I was taught in my interview class. When ultimately, on the other side of it, I know that they're just trying to get to know you. They're trying to get to know you and if you're a good fit for the clinic. You know, specifically, I'd tell your story and I'd be totally open about it. I'd be open about your flaws. I'd be open about your things that you're good at, things that you're not good at. I'd be real honest with your expectations of mentorship. I think that's huge. I am who I am today because of mentorship, and hopefully I'm helping some people out along the way. But that's, you know, it's easy for somebody to say, oh, just be yourself and let them get to know you. But specifically, just be your own advocate in the interview. Be honest with what you want, goals that you have. If you want work-life balance and you don't want to see call and you want to leave at 5 or 6 o'clock each day, say it. I mean, it's in your best interest too. Because if that's not a good fit for that clinic, then you're not going to be happy there. Where were we, Mariah? Then going into like pay negotiation and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess like we'll touch on that because it can be its whole other episode, as you mentioned, but like totally. A 30-second spiel on it maybe.
Yeah, so I don't know if the first interview is the most appropriate time to do that. I think some owners will push that, and I would caution you to not box yourself into a specific number. I think beforehand you should do the research on what's the average for that area, so that you can say, you know, if that owner's really pushing you, you can say, oh, well, I'm expecting between, you know, this and that. I'm expecting between $80,000 and $100,000, something like that. So you have a ballpark that you're not boxing yourself in too much. As far as, you know, what you're worth, there's definitely a calculation that we can do, that we can run through. The owner's going to be looking for value, and he knows how many appointments you'll probably see. He knows you're an investment, especially as a new graduate. She may know what your average transaction is going to be. So, you know, the owner, she can calculate kind of what to expect for your first year and then translate that into, all right, well, I'm thinking that I'm going to offer a new grad, I don't know, between 70,000 and 80,000. So there's usually a range that the owner would have in mind. And, you know, your goal is not undervaluing yourself. you just graduated vet school or are graduating vet school. You're a big deal. You're a huge asset to a clinic. You're going to work hard and you're worth it.
I think that's a good way to think about it. Because that's something that honestly they kind of tell us about, but then it wasn't till recently that someone really brought up, like, have you thought about negotiating a paycheck? And I was like, I had not even thought about that. So
yeah,
that's where I'm starting to learn about these things. And I know if I'm thinking about it now, I know I'm not the only vet student who's maybe thought about it or maybe hasn't even thought about it and is at the same stage. So thank you.
We'll come back and do a financial version of it. Because yeah, it is that's where my, full disclosure, that's where my master's training is in. And it's definitely an area of interest to me because I feel like, whether we like it or not, finances are definitely a factor in our happiness as veterinarians.
Yeah, that's actually something I wish I had done, maybe like an undergrad class or something, just to, one, beef up my vet school applications, but two, just to give me more of an understanding about the actual practice and how to run a business and how to do finance that way. Because that's just something that I wish I had had before this point in my life, but I'm ready to learn it on the fly, I guess.
You will, and it won't take long. It's definitely something you can learn on the fly. Do not think that you are behind. That is something that can be taught absolutely on the fly. So you're good.
Okay. So I wanted to take a little bit of time to, of course, like open the floor to you and your awesome podcast and just give you the chance to, like, we've already talked a little bit about why you've done it. And so I guess, like, what have been some of the highlights thus far? I know you just released a highlights episode, essentially, which I highly encourage people to go and listen to. It's fantastic. I enjoyed listening to that one recently. But what are some of the episodes that you didn't have in the highlight episode, or just what have been some of your favorites thus far?
Oh my God. Well, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from a fellow podcaster who's, you're just crushing it. So it means
well,
a lot.
Thank you.
Gosh, it's that time of year where I reflect emotionally, and my nurse's joke, I go full hippie. But I just go and kind of get really emotional about, what's happened from the year. And as far as, things that I look back on and highlights, there's just so many. And it boils down to the people in VetMed. Talking to them, each of their journeys has changed me in some way. And whether it's, sharing, my mistakes in vet school with a counselor, and her walking me through that, whether it's, talking to somebody who's currently going through chemotherapy and worked 20 years as a equine technician and is now, been fighting for her life. Whether it's, a friend of over 20 years, finding out that she was literally sitting at a stoplight, considering ending her life and stepping on the gas. Those are kind of and there's a lot of those heavy moments. Man, there's a lot of fun moments too. Just connecting with people and laughing and crying. It doesn't just end at the podcast too. I've formed these relationships with people, met up with them afterwards, gone out for drinks afterwards. And I'm just so thankful that the podcast has opened up those doors. And, I sit before the podcast. I cannot think of a time where I sat down for an hour and just had a conversation with somebody besides my wife. I can't think of a time where I had an uninterrupted hour where I just got to know somebody that I thought I knew.
That is a really cool point that I think is just like podcasting in general has allowed us to kind of really just take like an hour or maybe 30 minutes, but regaining that time that we have to build relationships. That's something I hadn't really thought about. That's really cool.
It's huge, right? Huh. Well, it took me quite a while to think about it, so you're good. I was like, man, this is just really fun. Oh, wow, this is getting really heavy. Oh, this is good that we're talking about this. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think that has to do something with happiness too. I mentioned the tie, and man, I don't wear a tie anymore. I wear a hoodie and skinny jeans into appointments. And I might not have shaved for the day, and my hair is probably a mess. But our community seems to be okay with that. That I've been more comfortable with being me. I'm trying to work on my swearing with my daughter. So that's a work in progress. Just getting okay with my feelings and my emotions, to be not to be uber cheesy about it, but just being okay with who I am and all of my flaws, and you know, some of the things that I get right. That was huge for me. That was huge for my happiness. I was way too hard on myself for far too long.
I think there's a lot of vet students that can echo that. Just being the type of people that we are, we tend to be really hard on ourselves, but it's always just really good to hear people who've been in the profession, again, like yourself, that you've had the experience, and retrospective is always 20/20. And as a vet student, I'm trying to take as many opportunities as I can to learn from people who have that to say. So I hope some other vet students can hear that and be like, you know what? I understand that, and that makes sense.
That's awesome. I loved being a vet student. I still look back on those years, and it just puts a smile on my face.
It is kind of a, like, even though I'm still a vet student, but I'm still kind of getting towards, I feel like I'm on that tipping edge where I'm just about to be a final year, but I'm still not. So I look at, like, the past couple years, and I feel like it's literally just flown by. I don't know where all the time has gone, but I'm so happy that I didn't spend all of my time studying. Hopefully my professors didn't just hear that. But I've tried to take the time to grow outside of vet school. Like, I know my first year, I honestly was more like a hermit, and didn't really do too much that was outside of actual studying, just because I had moved away from my home. I was in a different country, and everything was different. Like we talked about, the grading system is different. And so I just didn't really spend that much time outside of it, but I've now taken the time to just kind of grow and enjoy vet school, and I completely lost where I was going with that.
Now you're stopping, you're smelling the roses or anal glands or whatever you're smelling.
Oh, I'm hoping not smelling that.
And it's good. No, I think it's great. And you know, I always, you know, talk about getting out of the veterinary bubble, and finding what you can do to get out of your veterinary bubble at least once a week, whether that's getting on my bike, or going and climbing up a mountain or whatnot, or spending time with my kiddo and my wife. But whatever it is, getting out of your veterinary bubble, do it at least once a week.
Yeah, and you actually kind of live in like the ideal setting for just getting outside. Cause like you said, you do mountain biking, you have trails, you have mountains. I mean, you have Colorado in your backyard, which is like the ultimate adventurous playground.
It's paradise for us. We love it. The people are amazing. The community is amazing. Pets are family here. And it's just, I'm a huge fan.
Well, before we sidetracked the podcast. I want to give you the opportunity to, where can people find your podcast and where can they follow the day-to-day adventures?
Oh yeah. Our podcast is called Podcast of Vet. And you can find that on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. You can find it at podcastofvet.com. You can also follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram, I'm sure I'm having fun with Instagram. I'm not that old, but I'm going to feel old when I say this. Boy, that Instagram sure is entertaining. I just like dinosaured myself in that one moment.
just a little bit.
I know, right? I appreciate your honesty. I do love it. You know, just sharing silly pictures, building community, having a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, we're lucky to have somebody much smarter than I in that area driving that. So, yeah, podcastofvet.com, at podcastofvet on Instagram and Facebook, and you know, anywhere where you get your podcast. Yeah, thanks for that.
Always the opportunity for shout outs. And yeah, guys, I really recommend you go and listen. There are stories from all over the veterinary profession, literally all over the veterinary profession. And they're so engaging. Just hearing the different stories, it draws you in and it really gets you excited about the veterinary profession just to hear where people are and where they're from. But yeah, go and find them on iTunes, go and find them on their website. Make sure you go and leave them 5 stars, not 4, not 3, not 2, but not 1, but 5 stars, and a nice little comment. Let them know that you heard them from That Vet Life podcast. But yeah, I guess as we kind of wrap up here, we've kind of already talked about any advice that you would give yourself as a vet student, but do you have one more piece of advice that you would leave the podcast with?
You know, I think it's as simple as taking care of yourself, knowing that you're a big deal. You know, if you need to tell yourself that in the mirror every morning, hi, my name's, that's kind of awkward. Hi, my name's John and I'm a big deal. It sounds awkward when I say it out loud, but you know, valuing yourself, taking care of yourself, taking care of the people around you, being kind. Gosh, we get to save lives for a living. That's fantastic.
That is pretty cool. All right. And I guess with that, I will say goodbye. And until next time, guys, see ya. Hey guys, thanks for coming along to another episode of That Vet Life. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Now, I highly recommend again to go and check out John's podcast, Podcast of Vet. Links will be in the description. You can also find them on Instagram and they have their website. Additionally, you guys know where to find That Vet Life on any major podcasting platform, as well as Facebook and Instagram. But as always, guys, I love hearing from you. I love hearing your ideas and your comments. So come on over and say hi on Instagram or Facebook. And until next time, guys, see ya.